Hi, this is Mary from 91.1 WHFC, and I'm your host for The Owl's Nest. It's a part of the WHFC Presents channel, and it's where we talk to different faculty and staff members at HCC and see what's going on around campus and the people making a difference here at Hartford. I have one such person here with me today, and he is Dr. James Carmel, Director, Professor of History at Hartford Community College, and also the director of the Hartford Civil Rights Project. Good afternoon, Dr. Carmel, how are you?
Hi, Mary, I'm doing pretty good.
I have seen the online exhibit that you put together, and it is an exhibit that chronicles the civil rights movement during the 50s and the 60s. There was sure a lot of happenings going on in Hartford County in the 50s and the 60s. I thought that you might give our listeners some insight into this important Hartford Civil Rights Project.
Yeah, sure. Well, the app came about as part of a grant that we had, which we received in 2018 from the National Endowment for Humanities, or NEH. So we engaged a lot of our students here at Hartford over a few years, and we're still working with students in some classes to understand and learn about how the civil rights movement impacted Hartford Countyans and how Hartford Countyans got involved in it in the mid-20th century, the African-American civil rights movement. So the app we developed, which is a site-based app with stories from the civil rights era with funding from the NEH, and we produced it over a series of a couple years and launched it in 2021. And it really illuminates a lot of the interesting stories and really incredible courage that a lot of people had and the efforts that they went through, often at personal risk, to desegregate Hartford County, which was more or less segregated by race in a lot of ways in the 1950s and early 1960s.
Why is local history so important for our community?
Well, you know, I always say if you don't know your history, you don't know really who you are. History also can give you some insight maybe on where you might be going, although I don't believe historians can predict the future much more than anybody else. But it certainly grounds you in an identity, like who we are as a people. And so as it applies to local history, I think it's important to understand ourselves within the context of the community we live in. You know, so what came before us? How did we get here? The people that came before us, you know, people who might have lived in Havre de Grace or Aberdeen or Bel Air, what kind of challenges did they go through? How did they get through those challenges? And our focus, of course, is on the civil rights era and looking at civil rights, past and present, in the Hartford Civil Rights Project. But this could apply other ways, too. You know, if we look at the further history of Hartford County, which was settled by the English settlers, going back to about 1650s, I believe. So there's a long history, Western history here in Hartford County, European, so on. But of course, before that, you know, you had various tribes, particularly the Susquehannock tribe, that had a lot of impact on local history and who we are. So I think, you know, I'm a historian, obviously a big bias there, but I think you don't really know who you are, even as a community, without some idea of your history.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought we might focus on just one particular part of this civil rights project, and that is the desegregation of schools in Hartford County, and a particular individual, Janice Grant. I met Janice in a class, in a note-taking class session with Professor Dixon, and I think she's an amazing woman. I think we'd like to hear some information about her and how she has worked with the civil rights movement.
Yes, sure. Mrs. Janice Grant is really a tremendous individual. If you look at the scope of her life and how she has been a civil rights activist and leader and was very prominent here in Hartford County, in the civil rights community and the educational community for decades, you know, going back to the early 1950s through at least the early 2000s. And even today, as you mentioned, you met her when she was visiting Professor Dixon's class here, which he was part of the project. But, you know, she continues to talk to people, especially younger audiences, kids and college students, about her experiences. She grew up in a civil rights minded family. I think her parents were involved in the NAACP in Harford County in the 1940s, maybe earlier. She remembers as a child having her mother in particular being involved and having civil rights leaders come through the house, have dinner with them, stay with them. So she was exposed from an early point of view, and then she became a teacher here in Harford County. And at that time, the schools were segregated, so she taught in the school that was only for children of color. It's K-12. It was in Harvard mm-hmm. DeGrees. It's called Harvard DeGrees Consolidated. But there she did a lot of things. This is between about 1953 maybe and 1964. She first of all, she was the youth leader for NAACP. Mm-hmm. So in that time, she actually organized a group, mainly high school kids, who went around the county and protested for things like equal and fair housing. She became an activist in other ways around the region. She would go to anti-segregation events around the Baltimore area, and she got to know other people. And if you need to pause and ask me a question, feel free.
No, going on a lot. I noticed that recently she's been awarded you presented her with an award, Civil Rights Project Award here at the college.
Yes.
Yeah, so you might want to expand on that for me, please.
Sure, happy to, Mary. Earlier this year, we awarded our first Harvard Civil Rights Project Civil Rights Leadership Award, and we gave it to Mrs. Grant in February of this year, is the first one, and it has to do with the lifelong leadership of civil rights, and it's broadly defined. But she met our criteria very highly. There was a few people involved in the first award. And we had a great event in which she was able to come and accept the award. And there were a lot of people that knew her that came. And we had a really nice presentation ceremony in February about that. But it had to do with her lifelong leadership, both in Harford County, where she was involved as an educator. She organized teachers at Harvard DeGrace Consolidated to protest the fact that even as late as 1964, they were still not allowed to work in white-majority public schools in Harford County. She organized a group that protested that filed a lawsuit, which was successful, actually, to move the school district along in these ways. She also was in the Peace Corps, and she worked on civil rights and equality themes in Africa. She joined the Mississippi Freedom Summer in 1964, in which you had civil rights organizers and leaders go to Mississippi to register people to vote, to often provide basic literacy classes, because in rural Mississippi, they were attacked. Famously, three young activists were killed. She knew them. And then she became Harford County NAACP leader on in the 1990s. So she was just, her whole life, she's been involved in civil rights leadership. So the committee that made the award just felt she was a great choice.
Absolutely. This is the 250th anniversary of Harford County. I wasn't even aware of that. And what kind of projects are happening here or have happened or are going to happen in the county? I believe it ends in March of 2024.
Yeah, well, this has been spearheaded by the Historic Society of Harford County. It's called Harford 250. And they have done a whole number of things, including publishing a book of people with various memories, writing essays about different aspects of Harford's history. They had this really big event here at the college, at the arena last March, which a lot of people came. It was kind of like an exposition. They've had various talks, presentations, and I think they're going to continue to do that, at least. The Historic Society also has an interest in generating enthusiasm for their own site. They've developed like a little museum, actually, in the entranceway of their building in downtown Bel Air. And so they want to steer people there and to learn more about Harford County history through their physical exhibition. One of the things is, you might say we're at the 248 year mark that marks sort of an important point for Harford County history is the signing of the Bush Declaration, or it was like a precursor to the Declaration of Independence in 1775, signed by a number of local prominent individuals near the Bush River in Abingdon, and there's a historical marker where it was signed, and it was a statement of opposition to the British, basically, and I know people involved in that, including the organizing fellow who's a local genealogist and historian and a former student of mine who can trace his ancestry back to one of the signers, and they're planning a pretty big production celebration, and I think maybe other events in 2025 will be the 250th anniversary of that signing. So that's been an upcoming thing in Harford County history. And then next year, 2024, represents the 60th anniversary of the Harford Civil Rights, Federal Civil Rights Act of 1964. So I'm actually working with folks at the county's Tourist Bureau, Visit Harford, and others in the community, and such as in the NAACP, to prepare material like videos. And I think we're hopefully having an event to celebrate the 60th anniversary, which will be in July of next year of 2024. So those are just a couple things that I know about happening in the local history area.
Also, I thought I might want to ask you about preserving historical sites in Harford County, because I was recently at the Lock House Museum, and it was a wonderful place to visit, because it's like, you know, you keep the old stuff, the memorabilia at home and all, and it reminds us of time gone by. It reminds us of people, places, and that are in our past. And to me, it's a sign of respect. Why are preserving historical sites in Harford County so important to you?
Well, I think without the physical reminders, it sometimes feel like the past itself can be erased. So having those important sites preserved physically helps us understand and know and interact and engage with our past in a way that you can also do by reading about it through like projects like our digital app and other ways. But, I think that in Harford County, since about the 1970s, there's been this just drive to develop. And as the county population increased a lot, and it became more of a kind of commuter site for people going into Baltimore and sometimes even D.C., that there has been, it's almost like a pressure coming from the real estate community, and often supported by the local government, to develop and move into the future. And yeah, it's understandable from an economic and a social planning point of view, but I think maybe in that process we've lost too many important buildings, important physical memories. Yeah. So I'm glad we actually placed one of our HCC public history interns at the Lock House Museum a few years ago. And I think it's a really good site that's preserved. And I'm glad they have a little museum there explaining what happened. I'm not a preservationist, but for a couple of years I was part of the county's Historic Preservation Commission. So I learned about the process, and it's a complicated process. You have to apply and get approvals at the state level, and then there's a federal application to be a National Historic Property Site officially. And it's not always easy to get done, even if you do want to preserve your site, but having a historic designation does protect it some level from rampant from development. But the property owner has to want to do that and go through the application process, which can be time consuming and maybe even cost some money. And so the Preservation Commission actually looked at that applications to get that process started, at least. But it's important. It's important that we try to do that. So right now, well, go ahead. If you have another question, I can.
No, I know. I just wanted you to finish what you were saying, because I think that's important, whatever you have to say.
Well, so there aren't many sites left on from an important event that occurred in 1961, which was a freedom ride to desegregate restaurants along Route 40 from Baltimore to the Delaware Memorial Bridge in Delaware, including ran right through Baltimore, Harford, Cecil counties. And most of the restaurants, the buildings themselves from that 1961 Freedom Ride are gone. You know, they've been demolished, completely rebuilt into something else or whatever. But there are a few left, very few. And one of them is a restaurant on Route 40 that's now called Ray's Caribbean American Food, which then was called the Sportsman Grill, and was a site where freedom riders stopped at to try and desegregate through civil disobedience, basically going in and breaking the rule to try to get served. So I'm actually involved in a project right now to hopefully get started on making that property a National Register site and even developing a small exhibition there, if we can, about the Route 61 Freedom Ride. So we'll have more. It's grant involved, you know, involves grants. So we'll know more about how we are with that sometime next year. But I'm really hopeful that we can preserve that building.
Well, I think I was going to ask you about any new projects you had planned, and you mentioned those in the county or at the college. But I just want to ask you how you encourage students to care about events that happened long ago, to historical events and history in particular. Is there a way that you develop to get them involved in the community and in history in general?
Well, the most effective way I can do it is through my role as a professor and steering my students to visit sites or exhibitions. So an example would be a recent Underground Railroad exhibition, and a few events took place in September from a few of my classes. But other sites, events, like when we just had this Harford Civil Rights Tour, our second one last month, and I offered students extra credit encouragement to get to those places. Occasionally we have trips to go to places here at the college. Do what we can. When the Harford Civil Rights Project began, our first year of the NEH grant, we had a number of events surrounding civil rights themes that we engaged students with, and in addition to bringing the material in from civil rights into their classes, in history and English classes primarily. So through projects like this, you know, I think you can engage people and get them interested in local history and what happens in their community.
That's really great, and you're doing a really fantastic job. Being tomorrow is Veterans Day, November 10th, I thought that we might end this conversation with your thoughts about the special holiday that honors our veterans.
Well, I think it's important, very important, that we honor our veterans. I wouldn't say my family has a strong military history, but my uncle was a veteran he served in the Army in the 1960s. One of my ancestors on my mother's side was a Union, I believe, captain from Illinois in the Civil War. And my grandfather served before the Great War, before World War I. So from a personal point of view, I want to respect that. But I think, you know, our veterans fight for the values that I think Americans, or at least I think most Americans, are really connected to. You know, whether those are our civil liberties, defined by the Bill of Rights, but not exclusively in the Bill of Rights, whether that's our tradition of democracy and good government, our position in the world as a leader, especially since World War II, in these areas, and it's our veterans that we have created the culture that supports this. So I also think it's important that we recognize people when they're alive, too. So we have Memorial Day in May, which is to recognize service members who died in the course of duty. And now we have Veterans Day to honor, you know, so many millions of Americans who have served their country but are still here for us to remember. And that's important because we've had times in our history where support for our veterans hasn't always been the best. And I'm talking about when the VA, for example, goes underfunded or is neglectful, or for whatever reason, veterans' concerns are denied or diminished. A good example is during the early Depression, when veterans basically had to rally and stage this kind of almost siege of Washington, D.C. to get paid their pensions due. a little early because of the Depression. They wanted them from the Great War. So that's another time. And then the VA's somewhat notorious underfunding and poor leadership in the Vietnam era is pretty well documented. So we don't want to repeat those mistakes. And so I think it's important that we recognize, we understand the challenges that veterans face, you know, whether that's psychological or physical traumas, and also the difficulties of transitioning from military life into civilian life. You know, if people, I actually have two current family members in the military, a niece and a nephew. My niece is training to be a Navy pilot right now, and my nephew is a Navy-trained doctor and in the Navy. So presumably they will be in the Navy for at least 20 years, but at that point, this will be when they're in their 40s, I think, that they will need to transition to civilian life. So how do we support that? So Veterans Day is a way of remembering the challenges therein. I'm very proud that at the college, as I've been here a while, but I've seen that the college's support for veteran students and active duty students, active military students, has increased over the years. And now we have a really good office, which really helps veterans in so many ways. Because I've heard directly from my students who are either veterans or active military who have a hard time sometimes utilizing their GI Bill benefits. You know, there's like red tape that makes it harder for them to get their books on time, for example, for the semester. So I think at the college we've done a pretty good job of supporting our military and veteran students.
Well, I really appreciate you coming in, speaking with me today, and we sure did learn a lot about your part in the civil rights projects and all the other activities that go on here at the college. In ending, I want to say, well, it's been great talking with you on the Owl's Nest, and I thank our listeners for tuning in. I'm Mary for WHFC. Please like and subscribe to all of HCC's official podcast channels like HCC 360, Veteran Sit Rep, and this one, WHFC Presents. For the Owl's Nest, I'm Mary Tachi. We'll see you next time.